Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
One of the greatest compliments I would hear about our show constantly was, oh, I brought my friend. He hates musicals, but he loved it. Oh, I dragged my husband. He hates musicals, but he loved it. You know, and I thought, well, that's so interesting because in so many ways, our show is like the epitome of what a musical, I mean, we couldn't be talking about it more. I mean, it is so like musical theater sort of turned up to 11, right? In so many ways.
Right.
But the truth and the comedy and the smartness and the design, I mean, you know, talk about, again, collaboration, getting everybody on the same page. There was something about that show that just took off from there. And, had such a mass appeal that way, and you know, and will, I hope, forever.
Welcome, everybody, to a musical theater podcast where we discuss the cultural and emotional impact of some of our favorite musicals in theater history. My name is Jeffrey Scott Parsons. You can call me Jeff. Today, we are discussing the musical Something Rotten, which was a listener request from both Connor and Casey. Casey wrote, quote, "This was the first ever Broadway show I saw, and it holds such a special place in my theater lover slash English major heart. Not enough people know how freaking funny it was, plus Easter eggs galore for musical theater and Shakespeare fans," unquote. Well, Connor and Casey, this one's for you. And my goodness, do we have an incredible guest. He's a two-time Tony Award nominee, first for playing everyone's favorite Nazi, Franz Liebkin, in The Producers, and most recently for originating the role of Nostradamus, or more accurately, Thomas Nostradamus, in Something Rotten. He is part of the all-star lineup for Charles Kirsch's Backstage Babble Live at 54 Below on September 6th. Everyone, please welcome the man who has stopped more Broadway shows than COVID-19. It's Brad Oscar. Yay.
I love that. That's great.
I mean, put it on your headstone. I think that that's the thing that I always heard about Something Rotten is how many standing ovations mid-show you guys got.
It was crazy. I've never experienced anything like it. Even quite as an audience member. So it was a very special part of the experience because it was so unexpected.
Sure.
As far as that goes, you know, as far as just the audience didn't even know what they were about to see, right? Expectations were so low because no one knew what this thing was. It came out of nowhere, if you will.
It just suddenly opened on Broadway.
I would name a show Something Rotten. I mean, it was just all so absurd. Nobody knew what to expect. So yeah. So initially when, you know, we were getting on its feet and doing the number. And it wasn't until we did it for the group sales presentation. And we'd done it in the room, the workshop. You know, you do in a room. A room is great, but a room is 50 people, 70. I don't know how many they cram in these days. God bless. But, you know, they're biased. They're this, they're that. There's so many things that go into, you know, what that is all about, that presentation. So my point is that when we did a full group sales presentation at the what's it called now? The 42nd Street Theater, what was it called then? I'm getting so confused. It's where isn't Kinky Boots now having a resurgence there at that?
The Off Broadway Kinky Boots.
Yeah, exactly. So anywho, we did this group sales presentation. We did a couple numbers, ending with a musical, And this group of, again, slightly biased, I mean, there are people who are there to you know, bring groups of tourists to the city, but they see a lot, and they see good, and they see the bad, and they see everything. So anyway, their response was crazy. And we were like, wow, well, that was fun. Wasn't that cool? And
well, that's not going to happen again.
Wow, but... I guess maybe it is going to be a good night, and it's not going to be.
Wow.
You know, I was always, you know, when you're doing something and you're in the middle, you're going to have to stop me from talking, by the way. You always, I always am, there's a part of me that's judging. There's a part of me that's directing. There's a part of me that's outside of myself watching the, you know, and judging the material. And is this funny? Is this good? You know, all those things. It's part of, I think, being a, you know, responsible actor. But anyway. We, I know that, and not alone, were concerned that the number would just be too meta, too wink, wink, too, you know, referencey and whatever, and wasn't that fun. But hadn't we sort of done that, sort of starting with the producers, if you will, as
totally.
Far as referencing other, you know, incorporating that into a way of telling our stories now, you know what I mean?
The self-awareness of the musical.
Exactly. You know, I mean, my God, Drowsy Chaperone is a brilliant example of it, you know, and it's been used so beautifully. So my fear at the time was, are we beating a dead horse? Are we only
gilding the lily?
Yeah. Are we just appealing to a certain demographic or blah, blah, blah? And the answer was a big fat no. To quote a lovely song from Mrs. Doubtfire, the musical, big fat no.
I'm sure you were very happy to be wrong in this instance.
Unquestioned.
And I remember watching, we'll go back in time, but we're kind of starting right in the middle of the story.
Yeah,
I remember watching the Tony Awards that year, and I almost felt bad for Fun Home because they kept winning things, but you guys would get the biggest applause. They'd be like, so-and-so from Something Rotten, and Radio City would go insane, and then they'd be like, Lisa Kron from Fun Home, and everyone's like,
Well,
like,
you know.
Honest, of course, brilliant show, deserved all of the awards. But like in terms of like there was no question who the crowd favorite was in that room.
Well, you know, that's a whole other, you know, that's apples and oranges, and that's, you know, exactly.
Absolutely.
So worthy in their own respect. And so, yeah, hey, look, it was nice to get the recognition. I mean, to be in,
hello.
You know, we got so many nominations and we did, you know, fare well on that front. And so, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, when you're talking about you're in these shows and you're thinking about it from a producer, director, actor standpoint, you 100% are allowed to do that because you've done so many of them.
Right.
As I was doing my like deep dive into your career, I was looking at the shows you've been in on Broadway, and you started out in kind of notoriously unfunny shows. Right? Aspects of Love and Jekyll and Hyde, not known as musical comedies.
Exactly. Well, in between, I at least did Forbidden Broadway. So I got
you did Forbidden Broadway for a long time.
But yeah, Aspects and Jekyll, you know, yeah, no big knee slappers there, but yes.
So was that just kind of like the roll of the dice?
Well, or... I mean, you know, exactly. You're auditioning, you're looking for work. Aspects, I was cast as a swing. I covered some of the, you know, character men in the ensemble. And so, yeah, you know, I didn't care what kind of show I was, you know, right. I mean, you just want to work, much less work in a Broadway show, much less, you know, a Broadway musical by Andrew Lloyd Webber, because that was his
hello
first show after Phantom. And so it was, you know, a lot of working with Trevor Nunn. I mean, it was a terrific experience in many ways, albeit not a kind of show that would become my bread and butter, if you will, or become the kind of material that I would be seen for. Certainly, if there's a revival of Aspects of Love, don't look for me. But but it was a terrific experience. And
I'm sure,
you know, yeah, I mean, the whole yes, just being my first show. And, you know, they spent so much money on the show and on us in many ways. And so, you know, that was all well and good. And
that's not bad.
And then Jekyll turned into, you know, again, who thought that Jekyll and Hyde in that original run was going to, you know, last for almost four years. So it, you know, provided me with a wonderful, wonderful job that I truly, for the most part, really enjoyed. And the people I got to, you know, that become your family when you do a show like that, and you're lucky enough to do a show that lasts beyond a couple months or whatever. My God, you know, I know some people, they're done after a certain window of time regardless. I have had, you know, my long-term experiences that I actually truly do appreciate and love, and especially to be home and working more and more is, you know, really treasured. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So then can you, well, your time with producers is epic, and I'm sure has its own episode at some point. But how did Something Rotten come around then?
Well, Something Rotten was such a gift in that way, and again, based on having the opportunity and the producers to get to do what I love and on a big stage, literally, and then get the recognition, be a part of that thing. And so, I was able to get into the pool, as I always say, sort of, or these concentric circles. There's like, in this dartboard of our little village of Anatevka, there's only so many people, right, who need to know you and appreciate whatever. And then you're in that pool. And so ideally then when casting is occurring, casting directors are thinking of you and or the writer and or the director and whatever. So there are many ways in which you ideally get brought into the room, sometimes for an audition. And if you are really, really just blessed and the randomness of being just offered something and not having to audition, which has happened for me a couple times. And this ironically was one of them. And so, really? So I was doing, this was a while ago, because I think this was sometime around 2013 it would have been. And I was doing Big Fish, and Big Fish, of course, sadly didn't happen in the way we all wanted it to.
Gorgeous.
And I get an email from Casey Nicola. Now, I knew Casey. I had gone into spam a lot, so I had tangentially, is that the right word? Worked with Casey. Jeez, my, he had been in and out or whatever because he choreographed spam a lot. I had done a great table read of My Favorite Year years ago with him, a show that, has so much good stuff in it. But,
great score.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful. So anyway, I get an email from Casey. Hey, would you like to join us? We're doing a week-long reading of this new show. It's crazy. It's wacky. I think it's really funny. I think you'd be great. I read it. I think this is pretty funny. I musical comedy is the hard, as we know, especially this is flat out bald musical comedy. That's hard,
yeah, man.
So anyway, I was invited to do a week long at the Music Stands reading of the piece. Just delightful. Couldn't believe, again, I'm like, wow, this is really sweet. And wouldn't it be nice if this project goes on to to stay with the project? Because, then so many variables can start to occur. And the first thing that came to my mind, sitting behind the music stand doing this huge number, if you will, was, oh, geez, what if this guy does need to really dance? What if part of the joke of Nostradamus is that you see this crazy old little guy or whatever it is, or just old guy or whatever, and then, he can really, do
all of a sudden extension.
Exactly. And just do things that Brad Oscar can't do. Brad Oscar can do things when he's given some time and repetition and blah, blah, blah. And I can look good and whatever, but anyway, so I was worried that, he was going to see it in a certain way or whatever that would eventually.
Please.
Yeah.
You're a Stroh staple.
You can't be afraid
of choreo.
Please work with some of the greatest choreographers in the history of this business.
Exactly.
And, please look at me. It was a terrific week. Danny Burstyn was reading Nick at the time, and I think John Cariani was Nigel at that point still, and Annalee Ashford. And I'm pretty sure about all this. It was years ago. I'm like,
of course.
Is that right, Brad? Are you sure? But yeah, Annalee. And I think Will Chase did Shakespeare, believe it or not, because he would end up playing Shakespeare coming into the Broadway company. But I think it was Will at that point, because they were going for a more direct. I remember when I heard the pivot to Christian, before we started the four, I was like, okay, this is interesting, because it was such a different, and needless to say, my God, yeah. what he, did and created in that room was, So I was invited in to do that reading, and it went really well. And we didn't know, of course, then you leave the room and you think, okay, well, that was great, because so many things don't happen. So many things.
Right.
And then the next thing, well, not the next thing, because it had to be practically a year-ish later. We do a four-week workshop. Yes, because I have to arrange. And again, glad this all worked out. Sometimes things don't work out in this way if you've already got a gig. And I was on the road with the new production of Phantom of the Opera, which was basically just a new sort of design and new direction, but it was Phantom of the Opera. And so I was on. I went out on the road with that for about 9 months, and then find out, oh, they're doing a four-week Something Rotten. And fortunately, that worked out. And my agents, you know, got me out, whatever. And then, nice. And so, yes, that was the fall of 2014.
Wow. Okay. So then there's a kind of this interesting curveball where Something Rotten is supposed to try out in Seattle, right?
At
Fifth Avenue.
So, yes, Something Rotten is booked into, as we're doing this 4-week workshop in September of 2014. We are all aware that it is on the schedule at the Fifth Avenue for the spring of 15. So that's, you know, and that's always sort of nice to know. Well, you know, you think, okay, well, at least there's an out-of-town production, you know, booked.
Somebody's taking it seriously.
Exactly. And I also, you know, I think anyone who knows anything about musical theater is probably like, yeah, it's good to have an out-of-town tryout. I think it's been proven more than not that it's really good to have an out-of-town tryout. I know it costs a lot of money and blah, blah, blah. But it's usually good for a show. It rarely hurts a show. So anyway,
amen.
So yes, there was a plan to do that. Well, you know, again, what happened in that room in 4 weeks, that initial excitement and that sort of, okay, maybe we don't, however they felt, maybe we don't need to go out of town, you know, dangerous, risky. I also think the theater presented itself, the St. James, because
which is
revival of side
another piece
was not performing as well, so that was going to be closing, and so the theater became available. Again,
grab it while you can.
Yeah, but these are, you know, can be very dangerous reasons to rush a show in. I mean, again, it could have worked out much differently, but
Absolutely. But
yeah, all those things lined up, and so it was crazy. I mean, again, I don't think anyone expected that was really going to be the case.
That's
amazing. Yeah.
The rest is history in a way. You open to incredible reviews. You enjoy a lengthy run, which you do the entire run, right?
Yes. Yes.
How's that? How was that to go from opening to closing?
Oh, it was great because, again, it was a delightful show to do. Audiences loved the show consistently. Going to work was, you know, just a joy. And with these people that, you know, I mean, the original cast is the original cast, so that's gold in its own way. But then, you know, we had some great replacement. I mean, we had these are all pros. So it's like, that's the joy also of doing a long running show, is that new people do come in. So you get to meet and work with new people, people you respect or have, you know, previously, you know, so wanted to work with. So yeah, it was really one of the special things about that, and about the producers and about other shows that I've been in, for about Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, you know, who would have thought in the third year of Jekyll and Hyde, into the ensemble comes Miss Kelly O'Hara making her Broadway debut, you know, beautiful as ever and so lovely. And, you know, and so I've known Kelly since then. And so, I mean, just in the way that, again, because there is such a great talent pool out there. So and Something Rotten being in many ways, it is classic musical comedy, and some of the best musical comedy artists live in this city.
Yeah, it really was a who's who of just musical comedy gold.
Yeah.
Coming through those doors.
Yeah.
How fantastic.
Yeah.
Hey, listeners, I know in the past I've discussed my relationship with Taco Bell. I get done yelling at children at rehearsal, I get my app out, order, drive there, pick up the food, drive home. It still takes over 30 minutes. Well, Factor is a company that's going to solve all of those issues, except the children doing theater part. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian approved, take that, Taco Bell, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You have over 35 options every week to choose from, including protein plus and keto options. Here's the thing, though. Factor delivers everywhere in the United States except for Hawaii and Alaska, which means I can't try it and I need you to do it for me. It's less expensive than takeout, and every meal is nutritious and delicious. Head to factormeals.com/musicaltheater50, that's musical theater with an ER, and use code musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code musicaltheater50 at factormeals.com/musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Get that deal, get that food, and let me know how it is.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Now, to your point about the show being a surprise, I didn't know the authors.
Right.
And so I decided to do a little research on the Kirkpatrick brothers,
yes,
Wayne and Carrie, because I had never heard of them. And when I started researching them, the first thought I had was, oh, we wouldn't have Something Rotten without Howard Ashman. The reason why is because these guys started out in animation.
Right.
Oh, and I feel like that bridge between animated films and musical theater was really reconstructed by, you know, Alan Menken and Howard Ashman.
Indeed.
And there is something kind of cartoony about Something Rotten, all of the adult humor aside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's living in this this heightened world.
It's
really beautiful. It's a beautiful match for these two brothers, who, by the way, are very unassuming. In every interview that I have seen of them, They're just as normal as can be.
Yeah. They're terrific. They're terrific guys. They are. And I mean, Wayne is a Grammy winning, you know, composer in his own right, and, you know, has a huge career, you know, down in Nashville and country music and gospel, I believe. And, you know, and Carrie, yes, with the animated features that he's written and or directed, you know. And then they brought in John O'Farrell, who is a noted English author, and brought his whole sensibility to the mix, which, again, informed, you know, smart people are good at collaborating, I think. Smart artists, anyway, especially making a musical is, you know, the most collaborative of efforts.
Of in all so of them. Ways. It really is.
So if you can embrace that and bring people to the table that you're, you know, and everyone's willing to play that game. And I've never, again, I've only been on my side of it. And I do, and I must say, again, the joy of being in that room for the 4 weeks was how collaborative it was how we all felt able to bring ourselves to the party and make suggestions. And believe me, as I mentioned earlier, you know, Christian Borle literally created that character of Shakespeare in the sense of the attitude and the tone and the comedy that was honed and the bits that were developed and literally some of the dialogue. I mean, you know, and it was just wonderful to see. So we were all able to, you know, bring ourselves in that way. And when you're creating a piece, there's such joy in the satisfaction then of seeing it turn into, you know, something that's permanent in that way. And now that the show is being done, you know, in high schools and community theater and everywhere, you know, it's so thrilling to know that some of the, you know, the stuff that we did, that we created, you know, will live on in that way. And
100%.
Yeah.
Now, the whole conceit behind the show is, okay, what if we look at Tudor England with the robust theater scene that we have come to, you know, revere,
right,
with Shakespeare and all of his contemporaries? What if we presented it as the theater community and business that we know it to be now, with producers and, you know, writers with writer's block, all of that sort of thing? I have this little clip from Carrie and Wayne Kirkpatrick that I want to play. As they were developing this idea and coming up with their musical vocabulary for it, they started judging themselves a little bit because they're like, this doesn't sound like Sondheim. Are we actually fit for creating a musical?
Right.
And this is what they say.
It's a show that's about ultimately to thine own self be true, which is kind of a tried and true theme. It's almost been done so much that it's cliche. So I joked, it's like, that doesn't sound like Sondheim, but if we're like, well, to thine own self be true, you know, encouraged to write the kind of stuff that we write, and that it should work. And that section of where everything is new kind of gave us license to go get kind of hip and funky, and it actually worked storytelling-wise. And the way this song came about, because, you know, opening numbers, usually the rule is, right, don't write your opening number first.
Yeah, we read some books. And one of the things that it said was you should never write the opening number first, and that's what we did.
Isn't that fantastic?
Oh, opening number. It's such a great
It is a great opening number. that talks about, you know, the Renaissance. Welcome to the Renaissance.
Sure.
By the way, fantastic orchestrations throughout this entire show. I mean, just the, all of the different sounds that were able to come from that orchestra.
Yes.
Was it Larry Hoffman?
Larry Hoffman. Larry Hoffman. Yes.
Fantastic.
Great Larry Hoffman. Yep.
But it starts out very traditional, like almost the beginning of Sleeping Beauty, going back to animation. And then all of a sudden it goes into like a more of a funky place. And
right.
that was the moment where they're like, okay, if this show really is about To Thine Own Self Be True, this is what we're writing. This is what we're bringing to it. It's a really fun
right.
mashup.
Yes. It's, you know, it's fascinating to make something so traditional seem contemporary and now and present. You know what I mean? Because
mm-hmm.
Musicals can be thought of as being so corny and antiquated. And so it's hard to hook an audience more and more, I find, with something either new and or very traditional and yet seems fresh. Or again, that's random, as we know, for that to happen.
So if I can tell you real fast, my first big introduction to the show was during the pandemic, because I hadn't seen it before the pandemic. And then I got asked by a local community theater to come in and look at it specifically at a musical, because they knew that I would understand all the references
right.
and pick up anything that they had missed. And so I started working with them. I worked with them a couple times. Notoriously, I had one rehearsal where I made two different people cry. I don't understand. I think it was.
You're
I
good.
Think it was just. I mean, it was a precarious emotional time during the pandemic. So I think everybody's emotions were very high. And then when you know you add tap into it, and people just get really frustrated very quickly. But the point is that I was just kind of gobsmacked by all of the hidden little gems. Sometimes. It's like four bars of Lacage.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's two bars of Sunday in the Park with George. And these are things that wouldn't be in a show that quote unquote hates musicals.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's very, very cool.
Oh, I don't even
know. Now, what?
There are many I don't even know. People say, oh, there's that and oh, there's that. And I'm like, there is? Because, you know, being a part of it, or I certainly wasn't, you know, I would pick up on things. Certainly, of course, I would hear things. And especially because we only hear, what, as far as the orchestration goes, we only hear what we hear on stage, which isn't always
sure.
a full mix or clear. So it's only when I occasionally would listen to the album or hear it, you know, played on Sirius Radio or something, when I really hear the song, I'm like, oh, wow, I hear things orchestrated.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Never heard. Yeah, exactly. It's terrific.
Let's talk a little bit about Shakespeare and musical theater in general.
Okay.
Because this is obviously not the first musical to take, shall we say, inspiration from the Bard.
Right, of course.
Just looking at the shows that we've covered on the podcast, West Side Story, All Shook Up, Play On, The Lion King. There's also Kiss Me, Kate, Two Gentlemen of Verona, yeah. Boys from Syracuse, Rockabye Hamlet. Why do you think...
Hamlet.
Rockabye Hamlet, right?
You bet.
Why do you think it's such a good fit? Why do you think we have turned to Mr. Shakespeare for inspo?
Well, again, you know, it's all story, right? We come down to the fact that, you know, it's all storytelling. And so, you know, he came up with some really great stories, certainly, along
Fair
the way.
Enough.
Certainly Something Rotten, you know, is not, obviously it's not based on it. It takes Shakespeare and puts him front and center as a character, you know,
mm-hmm.
and actually has, you know, in many ways a pompous, fabulous fool.
Well, it sends up his whole persona, right?
Totally.
Which is
totally
he was a bad actor, and so he decided to
right.
start writing.
And so, but I think that because my God, and I think this was another twist, if you will, in the journey of Something Rotten for people is that people, you know, there's so many people who really don't like Shakespeare, you know, who really can't wrap their, and I totally understand that. It is. It's a thing. You've got to be able to wrap your mind around the language. You pay attention. It's a thing. It's a way of telling a story that isn't terribly contemporary anymore, but still resonates. God knows.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it's hard for some people. So, you know, when your second song is, you know, your character defining I Want song is, you know, God, I Hate Shakespeare. Again, I think we hooked a whole section of the audience. They were like, I love this show.
They're like,
yeah, exactly.
Relatable content.
Exactly. Because so many people, you know, are put off by it in a way and, you know, understandably so. So I think that because in the world of theater, Shakespeare is a, you know, he's up there. So, it's a fun place to be able to play. It's a fun guy character to be able to play with in that way theatrically, because he is so theatrical, because, you know, the nature of it is so theatrical. So, yeah. You know, and then you take Tootle and you take all that sense of time and place that surrounded him, you know, again, a scene through the eyes of some, you know, very funny people and writers, and it's accessible in a way that enables us to then have fun. And yeah.
He might kill me for talking about him, but this reminds me of my fiance, Michael. So he loves Shakespeare, and he, like, the 70s Romeo and Juliet is 100% his vibe.
Right.
Like, that is
right
at the core of his aesthetic, personal sure. aesthetic. At the same time, though, I have dragged him to many a bad Shakespeare production. Mm-hmm. And one time we were in a theater watching Othello, and he fell asleep pretty early on. He just, like, slumped down.
Oh, great. And he's the Shakespeare fan.
And he's the Shakespeare fan. And then it got to the point where, like, Desdemona's being killed. And he kind of stirs and whispers to me, "Why is it so loud?" And I just, like, had to not chuckle, because I'm like, because Desdemona's currently being
right.
murdered. Michael,
they're
Mr.
acting.
Shakespeare fan.
Exactly. And they're acting.
Sorry to interrupt your nap, but this is what's currently happening. So my point being that, yes, it is a complex relationship that we have with very, very old storytelling and the sure. and the Shakespeare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you a fan?
You can be
honest here.
Well, no, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a fan. You know, I will. I like to see great actors in stuff. So, you know, most
Fair
of
enough.
My Shakespeare theater going has involved going to see, I guess, a certain actor, perhaps more than just, yeah, going to see a Shakespeare play for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but no, I can't say it's my fave. I can't say I've certainly never done any professional, you know, I had my time in college, you know, working on it and getting through it or whatever, but nah.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
And but here's the thing, is that we have a lot in common, because he wrote musically. Every play is, you know.
Sure.
Shakespeare was obviously very much tied to the music of words.
Yes.
I think that that's actually a great definition of our art form in musical theater.
Right.
Right. The totally. The music of words.
Totally.
So we have a lot to be grateful for in terms of this through line of Shakespeare in musical theater, and now we get to make fun of it. And so we're going to go through this show specifically to introduce it to people who may not know it, maybe encourage them to listen to it.
Yeah.
And of course, we get the added benefit of you having both seen and listened to it for over 700 performances.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Indeed.
The opening number, as we discussed before, is Welcome to the Renaissance. Welcome to this new way of life, specifically because before the Renaissance, things were a little dark.
Sure.
Things were not so great.
Exactly.
Yeah. A little Black Death, there are problems. And then the Renaissance seems to be this place of rebirth. And that's exactly how the song ends.
Exactly.
Because Renaissance means rebirth.
But
it's a great opening number.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
We know exactly what we're in for.
Exactly. It really does. It sets the scene, tells you what's going on. Funny enough to let you know,
yep.
Okay, yes, I think it's going to be funny.
And just some of the most clever lyrics as well. Then we meet our cast of players, if you will. First up, we got Nick Bottom.
Yes.
Now, this is where the Shakespeare references already start, right?
Well, because yes, he is a contemporary, he is a playwright, and he and his brother, and they're contemporaries of Shakespeare, and all of their mm-hmm. plays bomb, and all of his plays are big successes. So
absolutely.
Yes. So we are introduced to him as the starving artist who's just trying to provide for his family. And
yes, for his wife, Bea, yeah. and his younger brother, Nigel.
Exactly.
Who's also a writer.
Exactly.
What's already hilarious, though, is that Nick Bottom is, of course, the name of a Shakespearean character, right?
Yes, right. From Midsummer, right?
From Midsummer.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, we're like, okay, interesting. Why is he named after a Shakespearean character? And it becomes very clear
yeah.
that the way that Shakespeare is presented in this musical is that he steals all of his best material. And so from here on out, we're realizing, oh, the reason there's a Nick Bottom in one of his plays is because
he knew a Nick Bottom in real life. Or, you know, the younger brother, Nigel, who's actually a very gifted writer, right, is always feeding him his best lines. Right. Right. It's all of the running jokes in right. the show never get old, and this is one of them for me. Yeah. The Bottom household is struggling. They are not able to pay the bills. They have this money box, kind of like their savings, that they refuse to dip into. And Nick is taking it out on Shakespeare. That if it wasn't because of him and the fact that everybody loves him so much, that maybe there would be a little bit more to go around, right, a little more love to go around. Thus the song that you mentioned earlier, right, about hating Shakespeare. By the way, the most listened to song on the cast album on Spotify.
Oh, really?
Go figure, right?
Go figure, well.
Number two, Hard to Be the Bard. Constantly surprised by this.
Wow.
After he gets done complaining about Shakespeare, his wife asks him if she can help. She wants to get a job. But of course, during this time period, not a great idea. definitely frowned on, possibly illegal. Exactly. But that doesn't stop the fact that she wants to help this family, and she sings The Amazing Right-Hand Man. Now, I gotta say, this is my favorite piece of musical theater in the entire show. It's melodious, right, it's strong objective work, it's earnest, definitely, it's doing everything that the show will later make fun of, but it's doing it really beautifully, right, and
that
wholeheartedly.
Was written before we started rehearsals for Broadway. That was not...
Wow, it's a late addition.
That was not in the room. In the room, in the workshop, B had a song just about, it's killing me. I wish I had it in front of me. She had a very, you know, again, funny, clever song just about the predicament that the two boys were in, about how they were always failing, but they were still sweet, and eventually they'd solve it or whatever. It was sort of a, you know, she was pepping them up. Totally blanking on the name of the song. But anyway, yes, that transformed. Character arc transformed as well and became Right Hand Man, which is a terrific song.
I agree with you. I feel like it just grounds the show in a really interesting way that hasn't been up until that point.
Yes, and Heidi Blickenstaff sang the hell out of it. Heidi Blickenstaff. She tore it up.
Now, what B ends up doing is going out and dressing up like a man so that she can get jobs.
Exactly. A classic Shakespearean trope.
Another Shakespearean trope.
Exactly.
Within the show that's making fun of Shakespeare.
Exactly.
So clever.
Right.
What Nick decides to do is, instead of using the people around him, like Nigel, like B, to better his situation, he decides to use all of their money to go visit a soothsayer, someone who can see into the future and tell him exactly what to do.
Yes.
And so he goes to that part of town.
He does.
And runs into you.
Yes.
And you make your entrance. And of course, everybody spontaneously applauds, right?
Yes. He finds Thomas Nostradamus. And yes. And I do have, you know, some true ability. Get it? Sometimes a little wrong here and there. But yes.
You are a visionary adjacent. Because, another bit that I just find endlessly hilarious. Yeah. You know that Shakespeare is going to write a show.
Yes.
And that it has something to do with breakfast foods. But instead of Hamlet, you see it as omelet.
Yes.
Nick takes this as a scripture, right?
Correct.
That, I need to do what Shakespeare is going to do and write omelet first. So he sets out to write omelet. But omelet will not just be any play, because Nostradamus also predicts that the biggest thing to hit theater in the future is going to be
musicals, baby. Yes.
That's right. And I mean, this is where that song goes. So how long did it take for you all to... Oh, please.
No,
what'd you say?
No, I'm saying, and then 10 minutes later...
And then 10 minutes later, after this number...
Oh my God.
A glorious 10-minute number called a musical.
Yeah.
Now, how long did it take to stage this? How long did you guys work on this in the room?
Well, it took some time, of course. You know, Casey had pretty much, you know, had the thing mapped out. It was basically just sort of teaching. It was a lot. There's a lot of sections. Putting it all together, you know, was something else. But it was fairly routine, because again, the way the number is structured, it's easy to make good material work and live and thrive or whatever, because it meets you, you're there and you just go from there, you know, whereas material you're trying to lift up or you're elevate in a way.
How do I make
this work? No, exactly. The work that goes involved in that is often, you know, takes away from or doesn't allow you to, or sometimes the material just isn't good. Right. You know, it just isn't good. What are you going to do?
It can't all be good, Brad.
You know, I mean, it's all, again, it's all subjective, but we've all, you know, we've done things that we just know aren't playing, aren't living up to what they, you know. So this was a case of everything felt pretty damn good. And we had an extraordinary group of people on that stage, in that room. No one in the original Broadway cast of Something Rotten, and I'm pretty sure this is right, maybe not the swings, I don't want to, no one auditioned to be in the show, okay? Everybody was, you know, either part of the process leading up to Broadway, wow, or they were invited, but pretty much, I'm pretty sure on this, it was the kind of thing where, again, Casey had been doing this a long time. Casey was an actor, a singer, and a dancer, Casey Niccolò. So he had worked with a lot of these people. He knows what he's looking for. He knows the kind of people he wants to work with. And that goes beyond just your talent ability, because talent's great. But, you know, you want to be in a room with people. You want collaborative people. You want people who are going to, you know, be part of something in that way. And so so it was
people a very who you want to spend a lot of time with.
Yeah.
Because eight shows a week is no joke.
Correct. And you know they're going to bring their A game. That ensemble of Something Rotten. I mean, you add up the Broadway credits of that ensemble of Something Rotten. It's crazy. It's, you know, it was extraordinary. And we slanted slightly older too. And I mean that by, like, it just wasn't an ensemble of, you know, 20 somethings dancing their tits off, which a lot of these shows today, that's what it is, because the shows are staged in a certain way, or that's what they call for, which is all well and good. But but this was a much more varied ensemble in that way. And that was, you know, also very, very fulfilling.
Yeah. That's so cool. Sweet. So after musical, everybody stands up and gives another 5 minute standing ovation. Yeah, so now we're 15 minutes later and we go to let's talk about Shakespeare. Now we finally meet Will Shakespeare and he's doing Shakespeare where? In the park, of course.
Again, so damn funny. So simple. Just the simplicity of some of the jokes. You're like, that's so obvious and it's there, but it's but it's funny. But it's fun.
But it's you can't deny it's hilarious.
Shakespeare in the Park.
Shakespeare, originally played by the great Christian Borle on Broadway, won your Tony Award. I'm so sorry, Brad. the greatest compliment I heard from one of my friends about Christian Borle in the show was, "I am not sexually attracted to him, but as William Shakespeare, he could get it."
Well, there's the highest praise.
Highest praise. But he's this rock star. He's a little bit Mick Jagger, a little bit of a angsty teenager, you know, in terms of being a little entitled. It's such a great combination. It's a really brilliant, really brilliant characterization. Yeah. His first song where he is saying he's sharing his sonnets with the crowd as though he's singing a top 40 hit that everybody knows the words to.
Yeah.
It's really original. And I'm like, how has this not been done before? Because this feels so.
Exactly. And that's, again, that's sort of the brilliance of it is that it does. It feels like, oh, it's been there all along. And yet it's fresh. It's funny. It plays. There's no mystery here, right? It's just words and thoughts and ideas and stories and all that stuff. But sometimes, people come together and just, the right idea, the collaboration.
Now let's turn to Nick's little brother Nigel, who's very innocent. I mean, just like the purest artist heart, but also very innocent when it comes to his relationships.
Sure.
And I think B, Nick's wife, is always hoping that someday he'll get married, but like his social skills are not not ready for that kind of advancement until he meets somebody by the name of what? Portia, which once again, another Shakespearean name. Portia is the daughter of this very conservative Puritan man in town who hates theater because only, you know, whores and
gays. Well, which was so
whores and homosexuals engage in such a thing.
And again, why Brooks's performance was so hilarious.
Oh my gosh. Another great performance and another bit that never gets old because this guy.
Right. And another whole change in direction after the workshop, too, by the way.
I mean, oh, really?
Yeah. Brooks was not in the workshop. It was a different, it was a much more, you know, it was what you would sort of think it would be. He was very stern and domineering and straightforward and no, not very funny at all. But that's what he sort of called for until somehow. And again, I don't know how that, how Brooks and that role came together is beyond me. But what happened with that role was just hilarious and brilliant. And then they gave him that number in the second act again, because it was as the character developed and it was Brooks. And when you're writing for Brooks, my God, you know, you can write with total abandon. Because there is absolutely true musical comedy joy and brilliance. I adore the man. And so that was something that was a character that also went on underwent a very big change from the workshop to the Broadway production.
Well, I love where it ended up. It's almost like this Music Man Mayor sort of thing where he keeps putting his foot in his mouth.
Exactly.
He gets all of the sayings wrong. But in this case, everything that he tries to preach about is like a sexual innuendo. He just walks into it every single time.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's very protective of Portia,
yes,
his daughter. But she meets a kindred spirit in Nigel because they're both incredibly innocent and also completely obsessed with poetry.
Right.
And so when they connect through words and through poems. And Nigel is this beautiful poet, and it unleashes something in her in a very innocent way. Yeah. But it's almost like their first time together is actually bonding through the electricity and just romance of poems. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's really sweet.
It's very
sweet. It encourages Nigel to keep writing, because with Nick being so laser focused on creating this musical, which, by the way, isn't always going to be Omelette. It first starts out being about the Black Death, and that's a complete disaster. Because who wants to see that? But then, when Nostradamus gives him the information about Omelette and a prince eating a Danish pastry, then he gets even more laser focused on it and starts to ignore Nigel.
Right.
It's only because of, I think, Portia that Nigel continues to nourish that inner artist that really is just so full of potential.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, listeners. I know in the past I've discussed my relationship with Taco Bell. I get done yelling at children at rehearsal, I get my app out, order, drive there, pick up the food, drive home. It still takes over 30 minutes. Well, Factor is a company that's going to solve all of those issues, except the children doing theater part. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, take that, Taco Bell, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You have over 35 options every week to choose from, including Protein Plus and Keto options. Here's the thing, though. Factor delivers everywhere in the United States except for Hawaii and Alaska, which means I can't try it, and I need you to do it for me. It's less expensive than takeout, and every meal is nutritious and delicious. Head to factormeals.com/musicaltheater50, that's musical theater with an ER, and use code musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code musicaltheater50 at factormeals.com/musicaltheater50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Get that deal, get that food, and let me know how it is. Act two begins, and now we're in rehearsals. We're in rehearsals for Omelette, and also Shakespeare is complaining that it is hard to be the bard.
It's hard to be the bard.
A great song that sounds like Queen.
Yeah, Yeah.
I mean, it's very like Freddie Mercury.
Right.
And he is saying that it's that being a celebrity is awesome, but being a writer sucks because it's very lonely. It's actually very hard work.
Exactly.
And
yep.
And he doesn't have any new ideas. So what is he going to do?
Right.
What he decides to do, and correct me if I'm wrong, is he told at this point that the Bottoms are working on something?
Yeah, I believe so. Or it happens soon after that because he runs into Nigel. I know, and says he'll take a look at the play and Omelette, and
that's right.
Yeah, time-wise, I'm not exactly...
No, that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
So he receives word that not only are the Bottoms working on a new play, but it's a play based on an idea that he is supposed to have in the future. So he goes to be kind of a spy and infiltrate the show to find out what he actually is supposed to be writing in the future.
Right.
It's this weird Back to the Future type
right.
thing.
Exactly. So, he dresses up. He becomes part of the number. Of course. It's all coming back
and
to me now, too.
What'd you say? Sorry.
It's coming back to me now, too. You know, it's
yes,
it's,
and now...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been over 5 years, and you know, you do other gigs and other things, and something that you live with every day, and I knew, you know, basically the soundtrack... literally of the entire evening ran in my head. As we're talking about it, I'm like, now, how did Act 2 progress? What exactly? You know, plus there were many, you know, variations and especially Act 2 changed a lot during previews here in New York. And that was
really,
that was the trickiest thing we had to,
that can be scary.
Yeah, exactly. We did a lot of work on Act 2, there was a beautiful love ballad in Act 2 between the two couples called Lovely Love, gorgeous song. Really, really beautiful song. Everybody was very, very, very sorry to see it go. But it was the wrong song in the wrong place in the show. It slowed down the show. It's Act 2. You got to keep things moving. The one thing that they were really smart about, and everybody, again, collaborated well, and Casey Nicolau guided us so beautifully, was brevity, was keeping it as tight as possible and cutting a lot of stuff that just wasn't as funny as the other stuff. I lost so Nostradamus... because it's so easy to write Nostradamus jokes. I mean, good jokes. It's easy. I'm just saying it was easy for them to write really good Nostradamus jokes. There was plenty of, it was so fertile. And eventually we just had to pare away and let it go. It just, you know, again, as an actor, you're like, oh, wow, you see things, you know, getting cut. Well, there was a point in the show, if you want to talk about Act 2, in the workshop where I sang To Thine Own Self Be True to Nick in the jail cell before the courtroom. So it was who sang this 11 o'clock number, if you will, or this sort of the whole point of the show, as Carrie said. And so I sang it to him in the jail cell. And then we went to the courtroom and then everything resolved itself. Well, that obviously got drastically changed as well. And I remember the day we started rehearsal for Broadway, because I think by that point they had decided this, or maybe it happened. I don't know. But, you know, Casey said, I want to talk to you and here's what we're doing. And I was like, I get it. It makes total sense. You know, there's no reason for me to have that number necessarily at that moment when it eventually went to Nick, you know, where it belonged with our main character, if you will, who learns his lesson. And then it happened in the courtroom and the jail cell. I don't think we even had a jail. No, we went right from the big production.
You just went right to
the courtroom. Exactly. So this whole scene and song was, you know, again, was morphed and changed. But yeah, a lot of stuff happened in Act 2. So you'll forgive me if I'm not exactly
clear. Oh, no. You're like, what version are we talking about?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Wow. When that stuff is happening, how do you surrender and how do you memorize? Like, do you have... is that just muscle memory at this point?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a very active thing because every night things are changing. It was very hard for the B and Nick, for Heidi and Brian, because of all the changes in Act 2 they were working on constantly. And, you know, we were all dealing with changes and stuff, but these were big structural, sometimes entirely new scenes, if you will, that they were trying to go out there and do at night and see and try to make work. And then futz with or just scrap altogether and go back to what they had and try to work that. And it's crazy. It's, you know, I mean, look, there's something thrilling about it and exciting. You're walking the tightrope. You're trying to get it right. You're part of the process. So my God, you are the process. I mean, believe me, there are plenty of times. I remember some, you know, I don't remember specific lines again, but, you know, we'd go out and we'd try a new line, or we'd think this'll get the laugh. If we set it up this way, or if we put a word in, literally the minutiae of what you think, you know, you're trying to crack something. And I'd go out there and it would, you know,
crack
just an egg. Splat or whatever, you know. And eventually, what was the answer? Get rid of it. You know, if you're trying that hard to make something work, you know, unless it's absolutely necessary, plot, structure, this, that, story. But, you know, jokes that aren't working in a show like Something Rotten, where so many were working so well, you got to get rid of them. Because the ones that don't stick out even more so, you know. And I felt it, believe me. It's no fun up there as an actor when people are pretty much loving what you're doing. And then all of a sudden they're like, nah, not so funny. Nah, not so much. Hey, you sort of feel the sense of, right. So, you know, I mean, mind you, every audience is different, right? And some jokes are going to slay it, right, or whatever. But
a Friday night's going to play.
Yeah, I mean, sure. But the point is, what they were really, really, really smart about doing was really paring it down and really keeping it as lean, you know, as it could be. You know, musicals like that need to come down in, you know, 2 hours and 20 minutes with an intermission or whatever. You know, I'm a firm believer. Mm-hmm. Do it smart. And and I think that they did.
Editing is sometimes even more important than creating.
Yeah, unquestionably. Sure.
Yeah. One of the bits that stayed was that when William Shakespeare infiltrates Omelette the musical, mm-hmm. he is portraying an actor, right, who's going to be in the show.
Right.
His name is Toby Belch.
Right, exactly.
Another great little hidden thing from, what is that? Is that 12th Night?
No, isn't that? Oh, no, it is 12. I'm sorry. You're right. I think it's 12th
Night, right?
Again, my knowledge of Shakespeare, but yeah, no, I think it please. Is. Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, because Malvolio, that's 12th
Night. Right, exactly.
So funny. Shakespeare is, you know, trying to take notes and also he's constantly trying to steal Nigel's journal where all of the good writing is.
Exactly, yes.
Nigel's, of course, an innocent, so he's completely unaware of it. The other important thing that we need to talk about of how Omelette is being put together is that it's being financed by someone named Shylock. And Shylock is a Jewish man.
Yes.
He has the money to put up the show. And this is something I wasn't aware of. Like, you weren't supposed to hire Jews at this point?
Yeah, they couldn't, I guess, according to, you know,
according to Something Rotten.
According to Something Rotten history, exactly. Yeah, I guess not.
Which is craziness.
Well, you know, we've had some...
I mean, well, there have been fair share of crazy things happen in history. You know, I don't know why I'm suddenly surprised by this one.
Right, sure.
It was actually quite a few years later that people decided to kill Jews. So, I mean...
So, you know, sure.
This is a small comparison. That comes into play because it... criminalizes this production.
Right, the whole enterprise.
That is the revelation that kind of brings down the whole thing, on top of the fact that Omelette the musical is just bat poop crazy.
Right.
When we finally get to see what it's like, it's absolutely hysterical because it's almost Shakespeare and it's almost every musical that we know from modern musical theater, but it's also none of those things. I love the Phantom of the Opera reference where they're like, there's a mask, but it's not quite the Phantom mask. Exactly. But you know that in Nostradamus' mind, like, it is so adjacent.
Exactly.
Obviously, the premiere of Alma, despite being completely sold out and well-regarded, people love a musical, even maybe when it's not so great. everybody gets arrested because of this whole Shylock nonsense.
Right.
So now we head to a courtroom. Why? Because there's always a court scene in a musical.
Because it was good enough for Dolly and it's good enough for us. Exactly.
100%. I mean, you've spent a lot of time in a courtroom.
Yeah.
Because you got one in producers,
exactly.
Too.
Oh, that's right. Oh, geez, see?
What happens in the courtroom is that B has made a deal with Shakespeare. Instead of all of them being beheaded, she tells the judge that Nick stole all of their money to talk to the soothsayer, so obviously he's already lost his head and beheading would be redundant at this point. But can we strike a deal to just be deported to America? to get sent to the country. And Nick isn't quite so sure about that, but then B reassures him, hey, we've always wanted a country house. Now we're getting a house in a new country.
Exactly.
Portia also arrives with her father, and we all expect her to be saying goodbye to Nigel as he gets shipped off to America. But she instead bids adieu to her father and joins this group who are now traveling to the new world. They all end up in America. Cue finale. Welcome to the America. And they hear about the opening of Shakespeare's new masterpiece, Hamlet.
Right.
And of course, Nostradamus says,
I was this close.
Yeah. So great.
Yeah.
So great.
Great.
And that's Something Rotten. And I actually really do love the ending of this, because we always love to brag about how musical theater is such an American art form.
Yeah.
And it obviously came with a lot of influence from other places in the world. But how great to, like, in the world of this musical, to ship the horrible musical theater people off to America where they belong.
Exactly. Well, it's okay. Fantastic. We made them pay. They still do the musical comedy like we do. Trust me.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, yes. Such a fun show. I do not blame you for staying with it the whole time. It sounds like it was fantastic.
Yes,
experience.
It was a joy to do. It really was. And as I said, there were so many great things about it. And, you know, it's such a great theater. That St. James Theater is such a classic historical Broadway musical house. So, you know, I always love things like this, just the history of it all. And so to be a part of that and to have run there as we did. Yeah. Yeah. I wish it had run, I wish it had run longer. I mean, I feel like it's the kind of show that could have had, in a different time, perhaps. I don't know. But again, such joy that it's being done so much.
Everywhere.
And that the role of Nostradamus is being played by all different shapes and sizes and sexes. And I love it. It's what's so great about that role, again, is that it can be interpreted in so many ways. You know, anyone, any person can bring their crazy to the party and play, a good Nostradamus. Actually, my dear friend Kathy Fitzgerald, original cast member of The Producers and, 9 to 5 and many other, just played Nostradamus in a production out in Arizona. And I'm sure she was absolutely hilarious. So,
that's fantastic.
Yeah. So that's exciting too, I think, that it can live on. And not only that, it can be, again, so many people can have the opportunity to sink their teeth into it, hopefully.
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
I love that message of equality. I also love the message of laughter, because some of the most profound experiences I've had as an audience member have been laughing with complete strangers. Yeah. You know, there's something really, really powerful about
totally.
That.
It's so cathartic. It's why we do it it's an exchange of energy. What we do, live theater is always an exchange of energy. But there's something about comedy and musical comedy, again, being heightened the way they are. Plus just an audience's laughter, right? I mean, you can see a great Death of a Salesman, but you're not sitting there laughing for 3 hours. You know, you've created a bond, and it can be really intense, but it's a different experience. It's a wonder. I've had, some of the greatest experiences in the theater for me. I haven't been able to stand up after Angels in America or Brian Dennehy's Death of a Salesman. My God. But something that is so similar, and yet it's sort of the flip side, is just walking out floating on a cloud because you've just experienced, the joy of what that means to share and to laugh. The human condition, all that stuff. It is very special, no question.
Well, thank you so much for giving us that great feeling so much in your career. You've given us plenty of laughter.
I can't wait to see what's
next. As always, if you have recommendations for shows you'd like us to cover on a musical theater podcast, just like our friends Connor and Casey, you can email me at amusicalpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media, on Instagram and Twitter. We're also on TikTok. We have our Tee Public store, where all of our profits are going to Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. We've got Patreon !, where for only $1 a month, you can receive bonus content, including our episode that just released this past week with Adam Abraham, the author of Attack of the Monster Musical. It's a great conversation. What else? Share us with your friends. Leave us a nice review. You know I love you. So grateful for this podcasting community. Hey, Brad Oscar, how do we follow you and what are you up to?
Well, I'm not a big social media kind of guy, but I am on Instagram. I think at Brad Oscar 64. I think.
Sweet. We'll tag you.
Yeah. And yes, and of course, as you talked about earlier, Charles Kirsch's Backstage Babble Live at 54 Below on September 6th at 7 p.m. And yeah, the whole idea is that he's getting people to recreate numbers that they originated on the Broadway stage. People like Len Cario and Beth Fowler and Leroy Reams and the great Jill O'Hara, who I hope will sing from Promises, Promises.
I mean, yeah. She better.
So, yeah, it's exactly. I hope so. So, yes, it should be a really fun evening and a real, a musical theater fans sort of catnip, if you will. I'm very excited to be there, much less being able to perform. I will be performing Haben Sie gehört das Deutsche Band.
Showstopper.
Thing and the producers. I'm very excited. I've got my helmet. I'm ready to go.
He comes with his own helmet.
I do. Look, there are certain things you have. I mean, come on. If you're going to, certain things, certain songs need certain props and or costume pieces. And that song needs a helmet.
Yeah, if you can't have like knee-high socks and lederhosen, you at least got to have the helmet.
I will not be wearing lederhosen, but I will have the helmet.
Fantastic. Do you have anything from Nostradamus? Did they allow you to take anything?
Well, I could show. It's hanging on the thing there with hats, but that's my costume, actually. I do. I'm showing
you.
I can't show your viewers because this is a podcast.
Yeah, anyway, sorry, viewers.
Yeah,
and Brad Oscar's.
Yeah, day. I mean, my God, the thing is, it's not in tatters, but I believe it was my second one as well. Because, the number's quite a workout. The costumes get a workout. And for a costume that needed to look tattered to begin with, you run the risk of it, But I do have, I do have it. It's right there in my little scarf. And so, yes, one day it'll obviously go to the Smithsonian. Until then, I'll be.
Clearly.
I have care, yes, I'm caretaking. Yeah. Yeah.
This is just a transitionary period.
Exactly.
I get it. Brad, thank you so much for doing this.
What a
total honor and pleasure. And so happy to have spent some time with you.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been great. And I love what you do. It's fabulous.
Thank you. Everybody out there, thank you for listening. And remember, if you're not laughing, then at least bring the crazy.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.